Packers fans, and welcome in to the Green 19 podcast brought to you by PackersNews.com and JS Online. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined by Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood. Guys, Packers with a huge 36-25 win over the Los Angeles Rams on a night that epitomized the frozen tundra. As Aaron Rodgers said, these are the kind of games you win in Lambeau Field. Spoon, I'm just going to start with you. Biggest takeaway from this game, a game that can be really, really important when it comes time for the postseason.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest takeaway, is that they survived the week. And I think they wanted to survive the week and win. And that's the takeaway, I think, is that they not only survived, they won another huge NFC game that gives them a tie-breaking advantage over three big contenders, mm-hmm. or at least two. I mean, Arizona and the Rams and San Francisco as well. They've kind of dominated the NFC West. But, yeah, now they get a bye and a chance to heal up a little bit.
Yeah, and the NFC West is justifiably propositioned as the toughest division in football. Packers went 4-0 against them. I mean, that's – I don't know what other way to say that other than Packers went 4-0 against the NFC West. I mean, Ryan, what does that tell you about this team?
Well, they're good, right? But here's the thing. It was a big win. What struck me, though, is they won it relatively easily with playing pretty flawed. I mean, they had some issues. Chandon Sullivan fell down for an 80-yard touchdown, right? I mean, they can't field a punt. Mason Crosby's fourth straight game missing a field goal. It was not perfect, but it was relatively easy against a good team. It was 20-17 at halftime. The Packers marched down on the A.J. Dillon drive. He touches it 8 times in 13 plays. They go up 27-17, and from there, it's not within single digits again until 18 seconds left on a garbage time field goal. Yeah. This was not a close game. They controlled it without playing all that well. I think it shows you not just their talent, but also their depth. Yosh Nijman tonight, I didn't know that he even existed until he literally fell on a Mercedes Lewis fumble. For them to have this kind of depth, especially that offensive line against that defensive front, and to win with relative ease, I didn't see that coming. I thought that was pretty impressive.
Let's talk about A.J. Dillon. As you said, that A.J. Dillon drive where he touched the ball 8 times, believe that's the drive where it ended with him catching the touchdown. Is that correct?
Yeah. Where he ran through Troy Reader. Ran through him. Like, he wasn't even there.
And then towards the end of the game, the Rams did have a chance to come down and kick a field goal, but by then there was only 18 seconds left. The reason they didn't have much time to get down there and only kick a field goal and not have – and only have enough time to try an onside kick was because the previous drive, A.J. Dillon – ran the ball yet again and was able to milk more than 3 minutes off the clock. That was huge. Rams didn't have enough time. Spoon, when you come out of this game, I know Aaron Jones was back on the field tonight, but let's see, how many times did he touch it? 10 times? A.J. Dillon touched it 20 times. A.J. Dillon, 20 attempts for 69 yards. That doesn't jump off the paper, but you have to walk away feeling pretty good about where this rushing attack stands, don't you think?
Well, I think you have to be encouraged by the amount of times that they ran the ball. I thought, despite the fact that they averaged 2.9 yards per carry and their longest run was 8 yards, he continued to do it. And I remember saying, I can't remember where it was, but that I thought Dillon needed 20 carries and Patrick Taylor was going to need like 12. And that's pretty close what they came to. And the Rams played really good run defense. I'm much better than I thought they would. And they sorely miss Elgton Jenkins. He is a really good run blocker. And I think they're going to want to get Josh Myers back if they can and get a little bit of bulk. And they need to be better than this running it. But I do applaud the amount of touches because that at least showed they were willing to use it.
And there were times where Dylan just refused to go down. He said afterwards, you know, I do that, but he said, I had to think about that this offseason to know that that provided a spark for this offense. He also caught 5 passes for 21 yards and the aforementioned touchdown. Do you feel like, Ryan, I'll go to you, that Aaron Jones was just sort of on a pitch count tonight?
Well, Aaron, Matt LaFleur said that he wouldn't go there and say that when I asked him. But it was interesting. You know, he gets the start tonight, and he carries it 3 out of the first 4 plays. And I'm thinking, all right, they're just going to ride him. Like, no limitations whatsoever. He gets 6 carries the rest of the way. Now, he had 10 carries for 23 yards, so there wasn't a lot of movement there for him. Whereas, you know, it's one of those games, the offensive line held up pretty well in pass protection. It obviously did not – it was not a road-grading offensive line performance against that defensive front. When you don't have the holes, sometimes the Packers did this over and over again. Sometimes it's nice just to have a 250-pound tailback that you can just plow into the line of scrimmage and get 3-4 yards.
Well, can I ask a question?
Sure.
Why did they play Aaron Jones?
Because he wanted to play and he felt healthy.
That's a terrible reason. It shouldn't, you know, he shouldn't be deciding who plays. And It was like a nothing game for him. He wasn't very good. He didn't hit any holes. 10 for 23. He didn't really help on, I guess he did a little bit of pass pro, which probably was okay. But just for his long-term, you know, ability, I think Patrick Taylor could have gotten 23 yards on 10 carries. I just thought it was a dumb decision to play him. They should have held him out.
I don't think they let him play if it's a medical risk. I don't think that
it's not a medical risk, but it's what is he going to be coming out of the bye?
The offensive line did not open a lot of holes in the run game tonight. A.J. Dillon's production, a lot of it came by literally plowing through defenders. It was a lot of yards after contact.
Quadzilla.
Aaron Jones, I'm not sure that he has much more, even if he doesn't miss last week with an MCL. It's one of the offensive line got whipped up front in the run game. They held up fairly well with Aaron Rodgers getting rid of the ball awfully quick in pass protection. But I don't think – I just don't see them putting Aaron Jones on the field if they think that he's not 100% healthy and ready to go.
Tell me why it was worth playing him then.
Why not play him if he's healthy?
No, tell me why it was worth playing him.
He's healthy. Like, why not play him if he's healthy?
No, I mean, they got no production out of him. He clearly wasn't healthy. I mean, he may have felt okay, but I didn't see him make any great cuts or do anything exceptional. I think they would have been so much better just giving him the full time off. I think LaFleur got scared, thinking that they could lose this game, and he if Jones is cleared medically, then okay, he's going to play him. But I think I would have held him out.
You're saying that, do you think Aaron Jones pushed and the coaches should have stood their ground?
Well, no, I think he was medically cleared. Uh-huh. I do. But that doesn't mean you have to play him. You know, especially going into a bye week, and he is a vital, vital part of this team. And I would much rather, if I'm Matt LaFleur, I'd much rather have him coming out with 3 weeks rest after tearing his MCL out of the bye. And now he's going to spend the bye rehabbing, you know, probably whatever else happened this week. You know, it put a lot of stress on it. So
You're saying a week of rehab isn't worth 23 yards, basically.
No, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. I mean,
he doesn't know he's getting 23 yards going into the game, though. And again, I think a lot of that has to do with the offensive line. If Aaron Jones breaks one tonight, if they get more push up front, I don't think we're asking that. If he's medically clear, they play him. And it's not like they went crazy with it. He had 10 carries.
But if you can't get – let me ask you this. If you can't get much push with a guy like that, you do what? You send him to the edge, which is where he has found success before. And is he going to find – to Spoon's point, is he going to find success on the edge if he can't make that cut?
He can be medically cleared, but that doesn't mean he's himself.
Hey, there was one play tonight. He tried to get to the edge, and he was tackled like 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage because that's literally where the defensive lineman was. Like, that's the type of push that he was going against. I don't think going in that you just foregone conclusion. Your offensive line is going to get whipped like that in the run game. I think that you, if he's healthy, if he's cleared, then you play him and see how it goes. And I think that you saw an adjustment as the offensive line didn't get pushed late in the game. Look, three of the first four plays were Aaron Jones carries, six the rest of the way. Once they didn't get pushed, it became an A.J. Dillon battering ram type game. Yeah. And then they rode that because that's what they had to do. But if he's medically cleared, I
but don't they kind of knew that's the type of game it was going to be. And, you know, they knew they were going to have to ride Dillon heavy.
Yeah.
And I don't know why they didn't just say, all right, look, Patrick Taylor can be a big physical back, too.
Yeah.
Let's use him. Anyway.
I mean, that's a decent argument because, like you said, they knew that this was going to be a game where you sort of have to grind it out. You know, only 92 total yards rushing, but with 32 attempts, they controlled the time of possession for 39 minutes, 40 seconds. That's a 40-minute time of possession. Mm. That's how the Rams have been beaten. How they lost to the Cardinals, it's how they lost to the 49ers was the time of possession. And that's exactly what those two teams did as well. They just grinded it out. So, I mean, it's a fair point. Do you think it's something worth asking Matt LaFleur about this week, or is it too little too late?
I mean, sort of the cattle are out of the barn.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think it's worth asking, and worth asking how did he come out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a week after, you know, tearing your MCL, or what is it, 2 weeks after tearing your MCL, how good are you going to be? You know?
Yeah.
I just don't know. So, anyway, we can move on. I just wanted to make that point.
As we said, they rushed it 32 times. They threw it for 45, something that LaFleur and Rodgers both seemed a little iffy about after the game. Completed for 28 for 307 yards and the two touchdowns. There was the touchdown throw, technically, to Dillon, and then a touchdown throw to Randall Cobb as well. Randall Cobb went out at halftime with what was described as a groin. No one really knows when he hurt it.
Yeah, Spoon, did you catch that?
No, I did not.
I was
not
stunned. Was it the touchdown celebration? Or?
It may have been like running into the locker room and slipped or something.
Yeah, that's no a idea. Good point. It might have been something he was... You know, he suffered early, and then it just kept getting worse and worse.
Maybe something that happened on the muff punt, and then he just aggravated it.
That's a good point.
Because he got tackled weird when he muffed that punt, but then he came back and he scored the touchdown.
Didn't he have another big play after the muff punt, too? Or maybe not a big play, but he had another catch in the open field.
Yeah, he had that big long catch. Was that after the muff punt?
The 54-yarder?
So he looked okay on that.
Yeah, he actually did. I mean, he's not that fast anyways, but who knows? We'll find. No, we won't find out. But
we can try to ask.
So Matt LaFleur, give me the injury updates in all the specific detail you can. Blank stare.
No, we're not going to get into that.
Total blank stare.
Rodgers said after the game, he said how much fun it was having this game tonight with Randall Cobb. He said it felt like old times. He said, I can't remember the last time I threw him down the open seam. I think he said it was 2016 that he could best remember. Did this seem like... Let me back up and re-ask this. This is why Randall Cobb was brought back. This is why Aaron Rodgers wanted him here. They knew this was going to be their last dance, so to speak. Do you see this offense sort of coming together? Devontae Adams, hey, slow night for him. Single-digit targets, 9 targets for 8 receptions. Still 104 yards. We'll get into him in a minute because he eclipsed another career high tonight. But... of the 44 targets, I mean, this was pretty spread out. Let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9 different receivers targeted tonight. Do you see this offense sort of starting to put the pieces together with the ability to make a run, Spoon?
Sort of. I'm going to make another argument that nobody's going to like either.
Not allowed.
So it is Cobb has made a nice contribution. I can't take that away from him. He's been good. But the part that always affects me with these older guys is that one, they get hurt. You know, we saw Whitney Mercilus get hurt almost a couple games in. And then you've sat Amari Rodgers on the bench all year, and you have not developed him. and you have not developed Equanimeous St. Brown, who I think could be a real big contributor. And that's the reasoning that Brian Gutekunst had for not wanting to sign or trade for Randall Cobb, that some of these younger guys will start emerging. And now, you know, they're kind of really behind. I mean, Amari Rodgers isn't going to help them on offense the rest of this year.
Could it be said, though, that Randall Cobb being here might be a good thing? Because, I mean, what we've seen from Amari Rodgers is that guy is just not ready to play.
Right.
And yes, to your point, developing him would maybe help, but it might not. He might just not be a player. I mean, that's possible.
Possible.
Third round
yep,
pick.
That is possible.
And so at least you have a guy who the quarterback trusts and can actually go out there and produce. I mean, Randall Cobb was having his best game as a Packer until the groin injury tonight. He was playing really well.
True.
So
yeah,
at least you got a guy, right? Because maybe you wouldn't have with that third round pick.
Yeah, my thought here is that, you know, if he's got a serious injury and it ends up sidelining him for 4 or 5 weeks, which is what happens with old guys, you know, then all of a sudden haven't really developed your younger guys to step in. But that's my own. I just wanted to raise that because there's always this side of older guys that you have to be careful with because they get hurt. But he did. He had a wonderful game. He had an awesome, unbelievable game today.
Let me ask you this, since we're now on this subject. I get what you're saying about you're losing time to develop Rodgers and St. Brown, but if your goal is, I know your goal every year is the Super Bowl, but if your goal this year is like, you know, Super Bowl or bust, don't you think it would be worth it to set their development back a year and to have a veteran guy that already knows your quarterback that you know is a playmaker?
If he's healthy, you know, if he's going to be healthy and, but, you know, by the end of the year, let's say we had put Randall Cobb and Equanimeous St. Brown in the starting blocks in the start of the year, and they each get the same amount of playing time, who would maybe be ahead of the other? I think Equanimeous St. Brown might have been at least equal or better, and a different kind of target than Cobb. So, you know, that's an argument that can be made, and a lot of it, the reason I brought it up mostly is because he got hurt.
Yeah.
And so that'll be the big question is when can he return?
Yeah. And Equanimeous St. Brown is still developing pretty well. I mean, you know, to your point, maybe not at the trajectory that he would have if Randall Cobb wasn't here. But he has stepped in and made big plays when needed. He had he only had one reception tonight for 7 yards, but it was a crucial first down. He was a stud on special teams.
Yeah, he's really played well.
He's also a third-year guy, so, I mean, it's not like he's a rookie like Amari Rodgers. He's been here. He's had time in the system. And
fourth-year guy.
So, you know, he's not new. I don't know, from a development
No, but he's never really played a lot.
He's had a lot of injury, but he had a rookie season where he developed a lot. So I don't know that, you know, fourth-year guys, you're thinking about focus on their development at that point. Mm-hmm. They are kind of what they are.
Another guy who I think he's developing and doesn't jump off the stat sheet again. He had 13 yards with a long of 12, so he had 1 yard on the other. Was Josiah DeGara, and that was a huge pickup as well. That was a first down that moved him down towards the red zone. I know he's not a Bobby Tonyan, but is this tight end unit, do you feel better about it than maybe you did 3 weeks ago?
Yeah, they're kind of getting just enough from Josiah DeGara to have some sort of presence when it comes to the tight ends in the passing game. I mean, it's not a lot. It's not Robert Tonyan. But he's existent, right? He has a presence, and he's a guy that Aaron Rodgers has gone to, and with varying results, but, at you know, like tonight, it's been positive. And, you know, last week he obviously had a 25-yard touchdown catch in Minnesota. So there's a play or two per game that he's making, and if you can get even that, I don't know if you're getting much more than that, but it's more than nothing. So it's, you know, after losing Robert Tonyan for the season, you just want to get all you can get for that position.
And that's sort of a unit, Spoon, I'm going to ask your opinion on this, that's sort of a unit that on a lot of other teams, this production out of the tight end unit, it wouldn't be great, but it wouldn't be bad. It'd be what is expected. Do you think it's maybe it feels, is it relative to what you were getting out of Tonyan, who, in my opinion, was on track to become what, not there yet, but he was on track to become what Kittle and, oh my gosh, I'm completely blanking.
Kelsey,
thank you. What Kittle and Kelsey are to their teams.
So their tight end position has just become the sum of a bunch of parts. And I think you have to add Alan Lazard into that mix as well. Alan Lazard, basically they're using four wide receivers instead of a tight end. And he comes in and he blocks on running downs and he catches passes. So you can't replace Tonyan. That guy's too valuable. And but DeGuara's, I think he's given them enough.
It's enough. You know, they even threw the ball to Mercedes Lewis a couple times tonight, which I was like I forgot that he could catch passes. You know, it was one of those things, and he obviously had the fumble on one of them. But it is what it is. It's going to be what it's going to be. And I don't know. You know, I think it was nice for this offense to have Alan Lazard back from the shoulder. And I don't, you know. He's a guy too. Do you make the Aaron Jones argument with Alan Lazard? Because he didn't do much.
No, he didn't. He didn't. But he's not a.
Why have him play? Because everyone's kind of on the fence going into this, right?
Right.
Everyone's on the fence where there's the bye week's looming. So if it's close, just get 2 weeks of rest for losing one game.
Right, and you know with Lazard, I mean he's not as critical as Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones is,
sure.
A diamond. And
sure.
Alan Lazard is turquoise. So, you know, I want my diamond
shining.
Alan
Lazard's the rough. Alan Lazard's the rough,
yeah.
Which is literally, that's his game. Roughness and tough, and he's not the superstar guy.
But did you think they got enough out of Valdez-Scantling? Like, they've got Devontae Adams. They know he's really a good player. I mean, what he's going to give them every time. But they got to get something out of a second receiver. So he had four catches for 50 yards.
It was not – he didn't have a 40-yard catch tonight. He only had a 28-yard catch. That's kind of, that's a down game for him. He didn't hit a 40-yarder. You'd come to expect that, like, every game from that guy. But, four for 50. It's not the 100-plus that you had in Minnesota, but I don't think that's something that you can really count on from a number two receiver every week. If you're getting four for 50 from a number two and –
yeah.
You know, and tonight the number two receiver was Randall Cobb. So, they did
That's
get
true.
Production
yeah.
from
yeah.
a number two guy.
You're right, yeah.
And Devontae obviously was Devontae.
Can you put if you're making a assumption that or if you're agreeing with what LaFleur and Rodgers and some of the others are saying about the offense just not quite being there, what do you put your finger on? Because I don't know.
I think it's looked better since Aaron Rodgers got less rusty. I think there was clear rust in the first three. You look at the numbers. The first three halves that he was back from that COVID-19 absence were totally different than the past three.
Mm-hmm.
And it's obvious. And Aaron Rodgers said it himself that it's not an ideal situation for him not to be practicing. And he's been he hasn't been getting practice reps. There was 27 days from October 22nd to the Friday before Seattle. There's 27 days in which he did not practice. He had one walkthrough. That was it. I don't care who you are. If that's what you're doing to polish your game, to stay in shape, to stay refined, to prepare, there's going to be rust there. Like
yep.
No matter who you are, even
yeah,
if you're Aaron Rodgers.
Point. That's a really good point.
So
that could be the missing ingredient.
He hasn't been getting the practice reps, but he's been getting that, knocking that rust off. Instead of reps, it's been snaps. And so as he's played more, he's looked better. He's still not practicing, but he's looked better. And as he's looked better, I think the offense has looked better. I mean, they scored 30 points offensively tonight and felt like they left a lot of points on the field against a really talented Rams defense. It was a pretty – I mean, they not perfect, but it was a pretty good night for the Packers offense, and they still felt like there was more out there.
So the big question coming in tonight, tomorrow – does he go and get surgery?
That's it. You know what? Flip a coin.
Yeah.
And if I'm Mason Crosby, it's probably going to be the opposite of what I pick. Sorry, Mason. I didn't mean it like that.
I doubt we find out. Do you think he shares that? He might share
someone
with McAfee.
Will. Some, it'll be hard to keep it under wraps, I think.
He did reiterate that even if he does get surgery, he's not missing time. I mean, it comes at a good time. He gets the bye week. It's a pinky toe.
What the heck kind of surgery could they be doing?
I know.
I mean, you can't put a...
Split.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if they're putting a pin or a screw or something in there, but is that...
I don't know, Spoon. I've always been told that the worst thing about a broken toe is you can't do nothing for it. But then again, they put a man on the moon. You would think they'd be able to do surgery on the pinky toe.
Wow, that was a leap right there.
I did have one thought. Maybe they're just going to cut it off.
Cut it off?
A little Ronnie Lott action?
Yeah.
Hey, exactly. Ronnie Lott did it. He's a Hall of Famer.
Yep.
How tough are you?
It's fractured, though. It's not...
Well,
it
yeah, but
dead.
It's hurting him, and this is his possible Super Bowl year. Wouldn't you give a pinky toe for a Super Bowl?
That's
well, if that's the like
I mean,
dilemma,
what kind
I don't know if they're there yet.
What kind of commitment does this guy have to the team?
Just a great analogy. Like, what would you give for a Super Bowl? I'm willing to give you the pinky toe.
I think the whole Spoon holding Aaron Rodgers accountable might have hit an all-time apex with that.
Yeah,
man,
people are really
give up your pinky
toe. I hate him.
Give up your pinky toe. Come on now.
Oh, golly. Okay, let's talk
in
about...
In the famous words of John Goodman in The Big Lebowski, I can get you a pinky toe.
I can get you a toe.
Oh, God. Okay, let's talk about the other side of the ball.
Whee!
This is a Rams offense that comes in, granted, without Robert Woods, but with Cooper Kupp. With OBJ, with Van Jefferson, a running back that did a lot more tonight than I thought he would. 55 yards on 16 carries for Henderson. Let me back up. They stopped him in the front seven. They stopped him on the back end. I know Channing Sullivan gave up that 79-yard touchdown to Jefferson. But other than that, I felt like this offense was held up pretty well. I mean, and that's weird to say when Matthew Stafford had 302 yards. But Spoon, what did you see? What kind of stood out to you on the defensive side tonight?
So I think what stood out to me was that they sold out to stop Cooper Kupp. They decided that Cooper Kupp was not going to beat them. Someone else was going to beat them, but Cooper Kupp was not going to beat them. So they rushed four, dropped seven almost all game long. And the problem was that there were a couple times that I think the safeties bit on Cooper Kupp and allowed the guys. I really want to watch the all 11.
Where's the safety on the Shannon Sullivan
right.
Touchdown that he that's
and,
the first
and,
question.
And
ask.
Douglas, because if you look at Douglas, he's playing outside. I think he's playing outside. Yeah, he is playing outside technique, which means that he has help on the inside. If he doesn't have help on the inside, he's forcing Beckham to the outside. So it looked like Amos was the guy on that one, like he bit up on something. So it'll be interesting to see that. I'm sure Joe Barry's not going to admit what happened, but yeah, they really sold out on Cooper Kupp, and it worked, I guess. Ultimately, it worked.
Yeah,
thanks to Rasul Douglas.
Exactly. Rasul Douglas with yet another huge play. He undercut Cooper Kupp, picked off Matthew Stafford, ran it back for a pick six that was wide open. He said that coaches showed them that route on tape this week. So he knew as soon as he saw it what was going to happen. Spoon, I don't even know where to start with this, so I'm going to let you pick. Do you talk about, one, just how far this defense has come with Joe Barry, the fact that they were ready for that and read it so well, or two, just Rasul Douglas being possibly the pickup of the year. Actually, let's start with the latter, because I know that was something you wrote about after the game.
Yeah, I think what's been most impressive about him isn't just his play, because he still gets beat. He gets beat from time to time. I mean, he gave up that touchdown, and he's gotten beaten other times. But the guy...
The one to OBJ?
Yeah, he got beat by OBJ for the 54-yarder. But the guy... brings a toughness, an effort level that these guys just didn't have the last couple years. I mean, Devondre Campbell brings that, Rashawn Gary brings it, and Rasul Douglas brings that. It's like a toughness that, and it's like, here's a guy whose world kind of crashed from being a regular for four seasons to being a practice squad guy on Arizona. Mm-hmm. And he's not taking it for granted, and he's working his tail off.
That gives you a new perspective on life, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. When you face the mortality of your career and you got to come out the other side of that. The thing with me, all right, Rasul Douglas got beat on the OBJ touchdown tonight, but for the most part, he usually is in the right spot at the right time. He's sound.
Remember that breakup he had on Van Jefferson across the middle?
Really impressive. That was great. He blanketed him.
Yeah.
No DB is always going to have flawless covers. It just doesn't happen this league. Even all pros get beat, right?
Yeah.
It's rare, but it happens. Rasul Douglas has been really sound. Usually when he's targeted, he's where he needs to be. And you know, it's very different than Kevin King. You know, Kevin King's he's probably more talented, although at this point in his career, the injuries have taken its toll. But Kevin King was always been an uber talented guy. I mean, he came in first pick in the second round and was super talented from the very beginning. 4.43 40, 6 foot plus long, had good fluidity in his hips, all that. But he was hit and miss on whether or not he'd be in the right spot. Mm-hmm. And when he was right in the right spot, he'd be a playmaker, and he wasn't. He'd give up plays. It was very, very stark one way or the other. Rasul Douglas, maybe not the most talented guy. I mean, there's a reason why he fell to the practice squad, but he's just sound. He's always where he needs to be.
Name two plays that Kevin King made that were as big as the two Rasul Douglas plays. I'm talking about in his entire career has made this season. No, I'm not sure I can think of any, can you?
I can't either. No, there was the one against Scotty Miller. Oh, wait, sorry, it's too soon. Sorry, Packers fans. Didn't mean, you know, hopefully you're not, like, sipping coffee when I said that.
And, you know, that kind of goes along with your right place, right time. Because the Cardinals play, it's easy to say, especially as a Cardinals fan, to say, well, A.J. Green didn't turn around. Okay, he didn't turn around, and Rasul Douglas was there to make the play.
And he made the play.
And that was
not an easy catch, because, like, that's a bullet to you. You're not, like, it's like one of those, like, when you unexpectedly get a wide-open layup, and it's easy to miss that because you're shocked, right? Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, my God, this ball's coming right to me now, and he was able to, like, you know, stay within himself and catch the ball.
It was a lot harder play than the one he dropped in the during the game. That one that was right in his hands.
Which he said that was he kind of made a joke. I don't know if he was joking, to be honest with you. I asked him about the first Lambeau leap, which, let's be honest, it left something to be desired. We've seen better Lambeau leaps in our time. And he said that he still had that in his mind when he got the second opportunity. Oh, I get another chance at a Lambeau leap here. I gotta make up for it. It's going to be better. Oh, I dropped it.
Okay.
Yeah. Rashawn Gary did play versus the Rams. He, you know, that was going to be a question as to whether or not he did. And from what I could tell, unless it was invisible, he didn't play with a cast or anything like that.
No, I couldn't. I thought he did have a brace on, but I couldn't really see how.
Nothing out of the ordinary.
It was much smaller, if anything. It was much smaller than he had a week ago when he was practicing. That thing was a monster. It was like it was like a transformer on his arm. And I got to think that just the inability to have the play with something smaller as a protective device last week had a lot to do with him not being able to play.
Yeah, well, you know, like Kenny Clark wears an elbow brace.
Mm-hmm.
And Bakhtiari wears an elbow brace. You know, he hurt his elbow a long time ago. He wears it all the time. So there are braces that aren't that cumbersome. So maybe that's what he was able to go with. The one thing I could tell with him in terms of playing versus Aaron Jones was that you could see he could do some things that he normally does, which was like bull rush. He could bull rush, which is his strength.
Through a holding penalty.
Yes. Yep. Had a sack, you know, a strip sack. He looked more like a guy who was ready to play.
Yeah. That strip sack, we talked about that on our Facebook Live. So, Spoon, I'm going to let you kind of chime in on it here. That was a good combination, in my opinion, of instinct and moves, which just kind
That's
of shows,
a good move,
yeah, his progression and the fact that he was healthy enough to do it.
Yeah, he understood it was Whitworth, who's a big guy, moves pretty well for his age. But he probably had, I'd love to see the plays before it, but he probably been using power, and this time he just dipped around him.
Yeah, like a little swim move.
And got under, and I don't know, from what I've been hearing, and I don't always accept all these stats, but that Whitworth hadn't given up a sack and had only given up a couple pressures all season. Mm-hmm. And Gary beat him bad twice, at least.
Yeah, ended up being huge. They recovered that fumble. We were able to get points out of the drive. They were able to get points out of every trip to the red zone tonight. Technically, the box score says they went 3 of 5 because they scored 3 touchdowns in 5 trips. But those other two, they were able to still score a field goal. I know 6 points total is not as good as 14, but that was not a guarantee the past couple of weeks that Mason Crosby would even make those chip shots. Now, Spoon, I'm going to let you start because I know how Ryan feels about this. He's focusing on the one he missed. I'm looking at the 3 he made and going, that's a lot better than I would have expected based on what he has been doing the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and it wouldn't have been a bad, terrible day if he wouldn't have, if he would have hit that last one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that kind of put a sour, you know, ending to the day because he was starting to hit it normally.
Mm-hmm.
He had his extra points pretty good. But he does seem to be hanging it left more often than normal.
He skirted one in.
Even one of those that he made barely got in that left upright look.
Missing, but he got it in.
Missing a 42-yard field goal in this league is a big deal. Those should not be adventurous. They should not be close. The 42-yard field goal, it's an easy shot. And when it's the 4th straight game that he's missed a field goal, no, you don't get the benefit of the doubt that he made 3 tonight. You got it. The 42-yard field goals should not be an adventure, and that's a problem. I see this field goal unit still being a problem because 3 for 4 with a 42-yard doink, it's not good enough.
Yeah, and there was another, at least 2 bad snaps that I saw. One was pretty high. Bohorquez got down,
mm-hmm.
and then there were. Was at least one other where the laces were facing the wrong direction and he had to spin it. They're just not there yet. And I don't know. I'm just not going to give in on Crosby because, you know, the guy went 16 for 16 last year and in training camp was phenomenal. He was really good in training camp.
I think it's foolhardy to think that you should move on from Mason Crosby. What it boils down to, and Aaron Rodgers has said it, Maurice Drayton has said it, Matt LaFleur has said it, what it boils down to is the institutional knowledge that that guy has. And look, he made a 54-yarder in Minnesota. It's not like his leg strength is diminishing. It's an uncomfortable thing for him right now. He's missed 9 field goals. That's a problem, right? But when all this stuff is going wrong in front of him, any kicker is going to feel uncomfortable. That is a position, that is a play where you want to be still, calm, poised, not thinking at all about what might go wrong, and there should be no ambiguity. You should know that the ball is going to be snapped in the right spot with the right revolutions, and the hold's going to be in the exact spot, and all you have to do is kick your spot on the ball. And that's not something that Mason Crosby can do right now. So he's not absolved from the issues, but in no way, shape, or form is this a team that should move on from Mason Crosby. It's cold now, right? It's late season. December's here. Winter is coming. And this stadium, when it's cold, when it's windy, is treacherous for any kicker. There is nobody in the National Football League to trust more than Mason Crosby late in the season with how the wind plays tricks on kicks inside Lambeau Field than that guy. So you ride with that institutional knowledge. With that said, it's a big problem because it's 4 straight games of a missed field goal and 42-yarder should be
okay,
darn near automatic.
So you keep Crosby. What about getting rid of Wirtle?
They've got a bye week to do it.
Yeah, they
to
do.
Bring somebody
That's
in.
The right
they
point.
Do.
You're also
that is a really good point.
Do you want here's the only thing, and I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm not saying I disagree. But then you're again at the beginning of December, starting back at square one again, and at some point, like I don't know. This is why I don't see it getting better. There's no good answer here.
Let me ask you this. Werdahl played in his first NFL game at Kansas City. Do you bring in a veteran?
Assuming there is one, I don't know. I need to do a little bit of research on it. But do you have the guts to bring Hunter Bradley back? He was better than Werdahl.
He was better than Werdahl.
You gotta say, don't you?
He was better than Werdahl. Look,
I'm not sure if he signed somewhere or if he's on a practice squad or what.
If there's a better option, you go with the better option. But it's not just about how a guy snaps. It's how a guy snaps with that holder and that kicker. It's an operation. It's a cohesive piece. It's kind of like the offensive line. They all work together, right? It's the collective whole. And so I do think it factors into the consideration that you don't want to necessarily start over from square one in the beginning of December. This kicker has been through a lot this season already with all the stuff going on in front of him. That is so far from ideal. So now, Steven Werdahl's snaps have also been far from ideal. So it's kind of, you know, the good and bad and the ugly minus the good. It's just bad and ugly here. I don't know which way they go, but
starting from square one's not good. I think it hurts the operation to have a guy who can actually spin it and get it there.
They can do it correctly.
You're right. I'm not disagreeing with you. It's a problem.
I think you're right, Cassidy. I think they're going to look at a bunch of guys during the bye.
Would look at them for sure.
And, you know, to go along with what Ryan was saying, asked Aaron Rodgers about that tonight, just make it Mason Crosby stepping up. And he said, you know, in all my time in the league, there's never been two better kickers, in my opinion, than Mason Crosby and Robbie Gould because of what they have to kick in. Robbie Gould, 49ers now, but spent years with the Chicago Bears. He said, what those guys can do and the conditions they've had to kick, they're two of the best he's ever seen.
I wrote a story on this a couple of years ago that I really enjoyed writing because I learned a lot about the kicking dimensions and how the wind plays tricks inside Lambeau Field. And, you know, we were talking about it tonight before one of the kicks.
Yeah, because I said they're going to kick into the wind.
Yeah. So if you come to Lambeau Field, there's American flags on top of the stadium that carries the wind over the stadium from outside, and wherever those American flags are pointing, when you look at them, the wind on the field is going the opposite direction because it comes over the stadium and it bounces off the bowl and then it blows the other way. It is an absolute mind trick on any kicker that comes in because you see the flags, you think, well, this. No, it blows the other way. Mm. On top of that, there's also once they built the end zone stands up, there are air pockets. There are jet waves that go across the field that Mason Crosby knows very well. But when I did this story a couple years ago, I remember him. He told me that Adam Vinatieri, when he came here in 2016 with the Colts to kick, was messing around in pregame warmups and was just flummoxed. The greatest to ever do it. He was just beside himself with the wind dimensions in that game and went up to him like, how do you do this every game?
I wouldn't be giving him tips before the game.
Right, right. And it's one of those things where even the greatest that come in, it's hard to figure out Lambeau Field. Mason Crosby has figured out Lambeau Field. So talk about starting back from square one. You don't want to do that with a new kicker this time of year. Right. That is a problem.
I don't think anybody's arguing to replace Mason Crosby.
I've seen that a lot on my Twitter page. Are you serious? I've seen that a ton on my Twitter
mentions. Blog.
That's reality.
Packers, well, a lot of Packers fans think that, so I think a lot of people are, and that's not going to happen, nor should it happen.
All due respect, everybody's entitled to their opinion, but that one's wrong. It's more so, in my opinion, that I think Spoon is saying as well, is fix the problems around him. Yeah, you don't replace a guy like that this far into the season. Guys, I'm going to kind of let y'all wrap up from here. And Spoon, any final thoughts heading into the bye week?
It's the bye week!
Yes!
Yes!
Freaking Luya.
Yes!
Thank you.
What are you going to do with your bye week?
I got a plan this weekend, a little getaway.
Oh, nice.
Don't anybody rob my house because we got a big dog that's going to be there. So.
Sure. There's always a big dog.
Yeah, it's a big dog. He's vicious.
Ryan, what are you doing? Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, no. That's it, and I'm going to try not to think a whole heck of a lot about football.
Good luck.
You know, I'm excited. I'm gonna try to work as little as possible, but because it's been a death march for everyone to get here. But get to catch up on some time with my kids this week. That's gonna be a priority for me. So you know, obviously don't see them as much during the football season. It's very, very exciting. I got some fun things planned. Yeah.
That'll be cool. I saw that the Bucks played the Heat on Saturday.
Oh, you're gonna go?
I may slip down for
that.
There
you go.
You should.
I'm a big Jimmy Butler fan. And that'll be kind of a homecoming for Jimmy Butler. Didn't he play at Marquette?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, that could be fun. Yes, he did. Ooh, I got a plan coming together now. Well, fans, anyone listening, enjoy your bye week as well. Do as Spoon said. Try not to think about football too much. The Packers will be there on the other side waiting on you to take on Chicago Bears. We will be there for you at PackersNews.com to cover it all. This has been the Green 19 Podcast brought to you by JS Online and PackersNews.com.